about religion that we have to remember when we're talking about that makes it such a hot topic issue is because we're talking about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim to the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody. We're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge. So ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Hello, Universal Hive Mind. Today is July the 22nd, 2024. I'm your host, Nate Kapp, and welcome to the 71st Cubbyhole Podcast, where critical topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. The website for today's show is cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyHole.com. And if you prefer to listen to the show on a different platform, you can also listen with Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, TuneIn Radio, Pandora, Simplecast, YouTube, Odyssey, Minds, BitChute, and much more. If this is your first time listening to the show, welcome to the Cubbyhole. But as I have stated many times before, I definitely recommend going back to show number one, start there, work your way forward, go through the tapestry in order, so that way you'll have a better understanding of the overarching message that is delivered in the whole Cubbyhole podcast, okay? As for all the listeners, all the studiers of the show, welcome back. Thank you for your time. Thank you for all your efforts, all your attention. I really hope that this information has served you well so far, and if it has, I really hope that it continues to do so. Now, there are going to be slides for today's show, so if you are not already at cubbyhole.com, I suggest to go there and go to the top where it says Podcast 51-100. Click on that. Go all the way down to show number 71, and there you will find all the slides for today's show. And it's very important that you follow along with these particular slides, because just like on the last episode, I'm going to go through the slides and also briefly break down the symbolism that is tied with these traditions, okay? So it's very important that you follow along so that way you can really have a better understanding of what it is that I'm conveying. So I hope you guys are ready to go a lot further into the eschatology. And this is something that I really just want people to familiarize themselves with, because it's all about eclecticism. Eclecticism is really what's going to strengthen your understanding with a well-rounded view of what these religions and these traditions, these major religions and these very well-known mystery traditions, what they're really preserving and what it is that we're really looking for. Because remember, it's all about starting from the outer edges of the round table and working your way through the mist of Avalon, through the mystery traditions to get closer to truth, right? That's the whole point of this archetypal table, is to help the seeker get as close to the light as possible, to have a better, well-rounded understanding, because it's all about finding the syncretism of things. It's all about finding out what is similar between these religions and traditions, so that way you can start to begin to see the bigger picture, the bigger connection, and that central light, okay? Now, just as I stated in the last few shows, just so we're symbolically oriented, we are currently pulling from the chest of the third degree tracing board of esoteric Freemasonry. We're drawing out from the box, from the casket, okay? We're pulling out of this sacred box of the occult, okay? And what we're doing is we are coming to an awakening. We're strengthening this modern pillar of today, of the now. We're strengthening this pillar of this huge sacred bridge that is barely connected to the ancient pillar of antiquity, of the past. And when I say barely connected, I mean by a 5-inch thread, okay? Because this has all happened over hundreds of thousands of years. This bridge has been destroyed for the most part. And the reason is because there has been a major neglect, so much apathy, so much ignorance. Ignorance has been the absolute destruction of this beautiful sacred bridge. And what we're trying to do is restore this beautiful sacred bridge back to its proper sturdy form. At least that's what I'm trying to do. But the reason is because it is our divine conscious connection to nature. It's our divine conscious connection to sovereignty, to freedom. It's our direct connection to the raised elders of the past, you know, the learned men and women who have essentially sacrificed everything to preserve this information for progeny and posterity, for future generations. So we are symbolically journeying through the underworld to become aware of this sacred bridge, this beautiful occult system, which is Amenta. Amenta is the sacred land. It is the land of the occult. Truly. So this is all about becoming aware of the esoteric systems. And again, this is about Avalon, the mist of Avalon. So when you think of the bottom half of the zodiac, think of the arc as the bridge. Think of that whole bottom half is Amenta. Think of the whole bottom half as the occult, the unseen forces of nature, and the esoteric systems that help us understand the occult. So we are symbolically sowing and reaping in the garden, the sacred garden, the lower half of the zodiac. This is the black soil. Okay, this is all about learning natural law. This is all about Freemasonry, esoteric Freemasonry, because it's all about a system of morality. Okay, that is the very first part of the definition of Freemasonry. It is a system of morality. And so what we're doing when we're sowing and reaping in the garden, we're sowing seeds of knowledge. We're bringing knowledge to the information, being the garden. And just like the tree of life, the Kabbalistic tree of life with Da'at, when you're bringing knowledge, Da'at means knowledge, bringing knowledge to the information, which is the tree. What you're trying to do is you're trying to receive. You're hoping that you receive more instruction. You're hoping that you receive more wisdom, more understanding. Okay? That's what it's about. It is all about, just like the second degree of esoteric Freemasonry, the Fellowcraft degree with the spiral staircase. The spiral staircase is all about steps that are wrapping around in a spiral going up. And as you're going up those stairs, each new step is being revealed as you bend or wind around that coil, you know, coiling around that spiral pole in the middle, okay? And what that is analogous to is that each step is a new revealing of truth. Because as you take the next step, as you bring more to each step, a new step will be revealed as you go around. And that's why you have to have faith. You have to have hope that there will be another step around that bend. Okay? So that is what sowing and reaping in the garden is also all about. It means that you're doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And if you do receive anything in return, that's great. If not, that's great too, because you're doing what is right because it's right. And truly, when you are on the path, when you are on the unfolding path, on that winding staircase, you will receive more light. You will receive more truth. You will receive more of an understanding as you keep on working hard and keep giving, keep sowing in the garden, right? So, this is dealing with sowing in the black soil, because to have black soil means it's rich. This is the mother womb. This is the place that we bring the knowledge in order to process that knowledge. Okay? And this is dealing with water, and this is dealing with earth. Okay? So, what we're essentially trying to do is fill the grail, fill the cup, okay? We're filling the U. Think about the symbol, the letter U. What you're trying to do is you're trying to fill U, right? Think about this. I want you to just put the symbol letter U in your mind and even overlay the symbol U over the lower half of the zodiac as the arc, okay? Think of it as a cup, a two-dimensional cup. And when you're filling that cup with liquid, think of it as you're filling it with information. And what is happening when you're filling that cup with information? Well, think about any time that you fill a cup up with water. What's happening to the water as you keep filling? The water rises, and that means it's pushing the air up, right? So that is a very simple symbolic way of this whole underworld journey. Because as you are giving the liquid to the cup, giving the knowledge to the mind, now the mind is filling up. And that means it is raising. And you can look at that as raising the spirit, right? Another way to look at this is when you think of that symbol letter U, look at one point. So you have two points that are facing up, and then you have the arc, which is facing down. So just think of one point of the U is where you enter. And so you're entering into the tomb, right? The whole U is a tomb at first when you're entering. So the tomb is symbolically where the material mind goes to its death, okay? To its symbolic death, right? Where the material mind is no longer the dominator of the mind. So this arc of the U is that journey through the underworld, and then the point, the other point facing up where you're coming out. This is the rays out of the womb. So the U is also the womb. So you're raising out of the womb for your second birth, your spirit birth. The birth where the spirit and the material come together, where spirit is raised in the material, meaning that the neocortex is in unison with itself, where the R complex and the limbic system are in unison, causing the quote-unquote child birth, being the neo, the new cortex part of the brain. So it's a very beautiful, ancient science. And the more that we go through this information, the more that we'll really start to understand these very simple symbols. And so I really hope that I painted that well in your mind, and I hope that you see what I'm saying. You know, the garden is a beautiful place to cultivate. We are always using the garden, whether we know that or not. It's when we become conscious of it that we can actually grow something good. Because if we don't know that we have a garden within, then this is just like the trivium process. If you're using the trivium process unconsciously, well, then as you take in garbage and process that garbage, you're going to have an output of garbage. And that's the same principle of the garden. The garden is the exact same principle. Now, what we're trying to understand with this whole science and all these mystery schools or mystery traditions is we're trying to get back to the great sacred cosmic teachers and the science that they inspired to be aligned to and to be preserved. And that is, the cosmic teachers are the sun, they're the moon, they're the planets, and they are the stars. These are the true celestial beings from outer space. These are the real extraterrestrials that we should take very seriously, because they are the cosmic beings that have inspired us to help us understand our place here in the cosmos, to help us understand when to plant and when to harvest. And also, it has inspired us morally as well. Okay, so there's so much that these great extraterrestrials truly have helped us understand about ourselves, and we have preserved it in a way that we have built these traditions, and we have corrupted the science that has been preserved. And so what I'm trying to do, what we're trying to do on the Cubbyhole, is we're trying to preserve and bring back that understanding and bring back the importance of preserving these sciences to our best ability. Okay? So we're trying to rediscover these sacred sciences. Okay? We're trying to re-emerge these beautiful sciences of the celestial beings from outer space. Now, there is so much to cover for the rest of the show, and I'm going to take as long as I need to take. I'm definitely going to make sure that I get through the mystery traditions, and if we have time, I will get into the deeper aspects dealing with the sun, the moon, the planets, and the stars. And if not, that will definitely happen on the next episode, but we really have to go through these mystery schools to begin to really see where we're going to get the necessary understanding, an eclectic, well-rounded idea or science that can really help us further refine these ancient origins of where these sciences really came from. Okay. So now, just real quick, I want to give an announcement, and then I want to get into the overview of the last episode, number 70, and then we will jump into the content for this show. Okay. So my new presentation, Earth Brain 3, with the subtitle The Divine Synchromystic Orientation. I'm going to pre-record this presentation, and it will come out November 3rd at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So please do not miss this. It is going to be my most important critical work that I've put out yet. I am doing my best to make sure that it is very simple and a lot more thorough, because the last two presentations, Earth Brain 1 and Earth Brain 2, I definitely had to condense and consolidate so much information in such a short amount of time. And so I'm going to really make this more accessible and make it more clear and make more sense, okay? And if you have found value in Earth Brain 1 and 2, and you'd like to help get the word out, I put the poster in the slide section and also on the homepage. You can just right-click it, save it to your photos. You can share it with your family, your friends, share it on your social media, share it to your podcast show if you have one. Share it anywhere you want, and that will be much appreciated, because I really do feel like this presentation is going to be very simple, but also very complex as well. But I think it is going to really help people understand what is really going on in this world and how orientation is just so not only valuable, but it is so critical, because as we remain disoriented, we remain sitting ducks in our mind, and the dominators of this world can just wreak havoc on our minds if we remain disoriented. So now we are going to briefly cover the last episode, just so we are all on the same page. So I got into the exoteric eschatology versus the esoteric eschatology, and I used the archetypal roundtable to express this, to really show how the exoteric eschatology is dealing with these major religions, which is basically putting an emphasis on the future. The historical eschatology, which is putting the emphasis on the future, getting people to really focus on future events like the second coming or the final judgment, or, you know, things that people really take very literal. And this is what causes materialism. Okay. And then the esoteric eschatology is getting more into the mythical or the mystical aspects of eschatology, which is dealing with the here and now. It's dealing with that which is non-temporal, okay? It's timeless. And these traditions can really help us understand ourselves a lot further and get closer and closer to that cup at the center of the round table, which is truth. Okay. And this is all about eclecticism. It's all about syncretism. Okay. So to become more well-rounded. So think of the round table as just being well-rounded. Think of the round table as being able to see all sides of that cup. Like I said in the very first episode of the Cubbyhole, it's all about learning all the different parts of that cup to really see that central light, to have a better, well-rounded, eclectic understanding. So I got into death and rebirth. That's really been the whole theme, because that really is the eschatology, being the study of final things, the study of commencement and recommencement of a cycle, the Alpha and the Omega. And it's also dealing with rejuvenation, and it's dealing with mental, material death, and then on to the spiritual rebirth. So this is really just the rite of passage, okay? And again, Avalon, such a very important aspect to the King Arthur legend, the Mist of Avalon. And this is all dealing with the Zodiac, all right? Everything is dealing with the Zodiac, especially in the solar mythos aspect, okay? But it does go a lot further than that. So this is all dealing with the inner journey of the soul. It's dealing with darkness. It's dealing with soil. It's dealing with the underworld, hell, the tomb, the womb, death, metamorphosis, natural law. The mystery traditions that I covered on the last episode were Rosicrucianism, Gnosticism, King Arthur, Kabbalah, Tarot, and with Tarot, I talked about the cards of death and judgment. Such very powerful cards that can really help us with the imagery, and the symbolism can really just help understand this whole process. Okay. And of course, if you're really paying attention, you can see how all these traditions and all these religions, they're all tied together in some form, okay? And the reason is, as we're going to get into eventually, is because it's dealing with the sun, the moon, the stars, and the planets, okay? So, just to let you know, also, I put all the mystery tradition slides from the last episode in this episode, so that way you'll have a full range of all these traditions all together, and that way you can save them and put them side by side, study them, and hopefully, you know, see where it takes you, you know, see if you can draw out more than what I'm bringing up on these shows, okay? And also, just something else that I stated in the last show regarding these exoteric and esoteric religions and traditions. I don't consider myself to be any type of scholar. I don't know every detail of these religions or these mystery traditions, but I am continuously studying these traditions. It's an ongoing study. I care about the information that I've researched regarding these certain traditions, okay? But what I'm really trying to get at here is, in particular, is the syncretism of the eschatology between all these religions and mystery traditions just to show the similar themes and to show the concepts, because it's all surrounding this idea of a true awakening, a true spiritual awakening. Okay, and it's also part of understanding the ancient spiritual awakening as well, because it's all about that sacred bridge that I'm talking about, okay? And also, one other thing that I want to make mention is that when we are going through this information of these religions and these mystery traditions, as far as the eschatology going down to the material death to the spiritual rebirth or second birth, just because we go through this information does not mean that one is actually going through their actual birth. Okay, I want to be very clear on that, because the actual birth does not just come just because you are following along with someone going through this whole ritual, okay? Through all these different traditions. That's not how it works. The real care has to be generated in order for this whole process of the real spiritual rebirth to actually happen. Okay. So we have to be very, I want to be very clear on that, because I don't want people to kid themselves and think that just because they're going through this information that they are actually having their real spiritual birth or second birth. I am trying to help inspire that second birth by going through this information. It is up to you, the seeker who has not had this birth. If you really want this birth, you have to generate that force of care to really begin that real journey of spiritual birth. Okay? It cannot happen just by listening to someone like me going through the symbolic birth. Okay? That's not how it works. So, hopefully, what I am doing is planting that seed to hopefully help guide you as Anubis through this underworld symbolically, in order to help you, because what I'm doing is I'm digging this information like a dog, like Anubis. I'm digging this information up, and I am coming to a spiritual, caring, agape understanding in order to bring it to you in hopes. See, I'm planting the seed in hopes. I am in the garden, the spiritual aggregate garden of mind that you and I get to be in at the same time. I'm planting this information into your mind and soul in hopes that you take it upon yourself to go further. And that way, maybe, just maybe, there will be a sprout and a germination, a caring, in order to have a flowering of good fruit eventually. Okay? So I am just making that very clear, and I hope that makes sense. And don't think of it as being overwhelming. And I know that it is. So I know that I'm asking for a lot. But also just remember that this is the journey. So becoming conscious of this information on your own terms, going through this information, taking notes, doing your own research, questioning everything that you hear, going a lot further than even what I'm doing. That's really what's going to generate your care, aka raise your spirit. Now, These mystery traditions are also referred to as mystery schools, and I actually meant to share this on the last episode, but if you can go to the very first slide for this show, which is, it says mystery schools at the top. And, you know, even though I think the listening audience is already probably familiar with this type of information, I just feel the need to go over this information briefly, just in case it helps with better understanding these traditions that I've already been sharing, okay? And again, I'm using the round table just to help people realize where this is symbolically taking place, okay? So I'm just going to go through and read all these parts of the mystery schools. And this is not, this does not define the mystery schools all the way. This is very brief, okay? So a mystery school tradition typically refers to a religious, spiritual, or philosophical system that involves esoteric or occult knowledge, being inner or hidden knowledge, rituals, practices, and teachings regarding the nature of the divine, the cosmos, and the soul's destiny. These traditions are often characterized by, but not limited to, a selective initiation process where adherents undergo various stages of learning and revelation. Now, down to initiation. So, initiation is a formal process by which an individual gains entry into a new and deeper state of knowledge or spiritual path. This process usually involves specific rites, teachings, or experiences that signify the beginning of a new phase in the person's personal or spiritual development. Okay, so again, initiation just means to begin, simply to begin the journey. All right, and symbolism and ritual means the heavy use of symbols, allegory, and ritualistic practices that serve both practical and symbolic purposes within the tradition. Okay, and that's what I've been going through really since the very beginning of the Cubbyhole, but definitely when we started getting into esoteric Freemasonry. Okay. And then there is spiritual or philosophical focus, which is that most mystery traditions aim for spiritual growth, enlightenment, or understanding of deeper truths about existence, the universe, and the human condition. And again, this is all about understanding the syncretism, understanding the eclectic array of knowledge from all these traditions to really see what they're all really saying. Okay. So the mystery schools are essentially a way for the student, the seeker, to have their rite of passage, which is, you know, their spire ritual. That's what the rite is. The rite is a ritual, the ritual. Okay? So it's all about the ritual, their spire ritual, which is the death and rebirth aspect. Okay? This is the soul's journey through the underworld. And this is about their spiritual development out of the material dominance. This is about their metamorphosis. It's about reconnecting to source. That's what these mystery schools help us with. So now we're going to start with the very first mystery school or tradition of this episode, which is Sufism. Okay, so the eschatology of Sufism. And Sufism, the word, has been pronounced Sufism or Sufism, Sufi or Sufi, okay? Sufism is probably what I'm going to use for the most part, okay? So Sufism is, it's an esoteric spiritual tradition within the religion of Islam, okay? It's an extension, it's a mystery tradition that you can find that helps you understand Islam or helps a Muslim further understand the real spiritual teachings of the Quran, okay, in particular. So it means the initiate path, which is viewed through the lens of the spiritual journey and essentially the union with the divine. And the slide states that central to Sufi eschatology is the concept of fana, which means annihilation. And this annihilation is about the annihilation of the material. So it's a surrender to the divine. And also baka. Baka means substance, meaning being the union with the creator. Okay, where the individual ego is gradually dissolved, the material self, the material mind, the dominator mind is gradually dissolved, leading to the ultimate union with God or Allah. And Sufis believe in the day of judgment, where all souls will be held accountable, which is what's called the barzakh, which is the liminal space between the material and spirit. This is the period that the soul goes through a cosmic judgment for their actions. But the emphasis lies on the inner purification and spiritual awakening necessary for this reckoning. And this is a spiritual karmic teaching. That's what this is about. So the goal of Sufi eschatology is the realization of divine love and the attainment of spiritual perfection rather than fear of punishment or reward. Sufis often employ practices such as dhikr, which means the rememberment or remembrance of God, which is very much in alignment with the remembrance of Osiris, and the spiritual retreats to deepen their connection with the divine and prepare for the journey beyond this world, this material world. Ultimately, Sufi eschatology offers a path of inner transformation and mystical union, guiding seekers towards the eternal presence of God. So I would say it's very clear that this eschatology is very much in alignment with many other spiritual teachings of transformation. And just like I've stated about hell or the underworld, some Sufi traditions view hell as a place of purification where souls are eventually reformed and prepared for their eventual return to God or to heaven. And that's very significant because that puts Sufism right in alignment with this underworld, okay, of the lower half of the zodiac. And central to this mystical tradition is the Sufi poet that a lot of people don't know is a Sufi, which is Rumi. Rumi is a Sufi poet. Rumi is someone a lot of people are familiar with his spiritual quotes that you see floating around on the internet. And Jalaluddin Rumi, his poems are just so beautifully written, and I really recommend his work, especially if you want to understand Sufism a little more. And his work can really help with, you know, not only understanding Islamic religion in the esoteric sense, but it also retains a certain grounding of the sacred feminine as a form of like an Eastern philosophy. And then you see the symbol or sigil of Sufism. We see this heart in the center. Okay, it is central between these two wings. So heart is always central. And being between two wings, this is also about understanding the language of the birds, because this is about levitation, which is spiritualism. Okay, to levitate from the material upwards to towards the Most High. So you see the star, the five-pointed star pointing upward, you know, the middle point of the star pointing upward. That always indicates spirit raised, okay? And then you have the moon underneath, the crescent moon underneath the star. And this is the support of the spirit. This is the barge. This is the cradle, the sacred feminine cradle. This is care. This is the lower half of the zodiac. It's also water. It's like the cup that I talked about, the U, right? Because it's all about filling that water up to raise that spirit, right? So this is a very, very powerful sigil. And it's also very feminine, all right? And the reason is because this is more of an Eastern philosophy, Sufism is. You know, Islam in general is a very sacred feminine preserver, because even though Islam is more of a patriarchal religion, it preserves a lot of the sacred feminine. I mean, think of the name Islam means to submit to God. The word Mecca, which is where Islam is mostly centralized, this means mother city. So Sufism can really help us understand Islam, and it can really help us understand other Eastern philosophies as well. Now we're going to move to the next slide, which is the eschatology of theosophy. And theosophy is really what the round table is all about, in the sense that it's a comparative study of religions that helps us find the underlying truth, you know, the syncretism. And the word theosophy comes from theos, meaning divine or God. And then the word Sophie or Sophia means wisdom. So theosophy means divine wisdom. And this occult tradition was mostly formulated by Helena Blavatsky. And she's also the founder of the Theosophy Society as well. And the slide reads that theosophy is viewed through the lens of spiritual evolution and the idea of cyclical ages or epochs. Theosophical teachings propose that humanity undergoes a series of cycles or rounds, each characterized by different levels of spiritual development and consciousness. These cycles include periods of descent into materiality, followed by epochs of ascent towards spiritual enlightenment. So basically, theosophy focuses on the constant flux and the rhythmically rising and falling in consciousness. And basically what it's saying is that the soul is experiencing many lifetimes and many reincarnations. And each lifetime is supposedly granting some type of opportunity for learning and growth and basically the overall spiritual development. And this is about moving towards perfecting the soul. Now, theosophy is also focusing on the Kali Yuga, like I talked about with Rosicrucianism and Hinduism. And the Kali Yuga is about being the age of materialism, material dominance, and spiritual deterioration. And of course, it's believed that once humanity goes through this age of the Kali Yuga as a collective material-minded death, then there will be what's known as the Satya Yuga, being the spiritual awakening age or the golden age. Okay. Now, I want to be very clear on this because maybe I don't remember if I really explained myself on the last episode when I talked about the Kali Yuga being the cycle of the spiritual deterioration or the material dominance or the, you know, the age of darkness. Well, I just want to be very, very, very clear that if we are to all accept that we're all part of this Kali Yuga as a real phenomenon where consciousness just magically goes through this rhythmic cycle and we all go into darkness together, this creates a victimhood mentality. This makes us all slaves, willfully. Because if we believe in the Kali Yuga, then, well, it's like, oh, well, we're in the age of darkness. We're in the age of material dominance. There's nothing I can do. See, that doesn't add up. That does not give us hope. What it does is it makes us feel like, well, we are just going to believe that we're in this age of darkness and therefore we'll just have to go ride it out and then eventually we're going to be in the age of the Satya Yuga, which is just essentially looking to the Satya Yuga as putting our sights on the, you know, the next phase or the next age. And that's really nothing different than, you know, the Christian doctrine of setting your sights on the afterlife. And that way you don't have to worry about what you do here and now. Just have your faith in Jesus. And in the afterlife, you'll get to, you know, party in heaven. And that is essentially the same if you take the Kali Yuga literally. So I think it's very important that we stay oriented and stay spiritualized in understanding that the Kali Yuga does retain very important knowledge regarding the epochs of the ice ages, okay, which is roughly, you know, 26,000 years, okay? So we have to understand that these yugas definitely help us retain and preserve that type of knowledge. Now, if you take the Kali Yuga into yourself, just as you having your own Kali Yuga, where you're going through your spiritual darkness or your deterioration or material dominance, and you can see that in other people, and what you're trying to do in the here and now is get to the Satya Yuga, which is the spiritual awakening, the golden age. That's in the here and now. That's something we can do here and now, and that is what the real spiritual lesson is all about. It's not about being victimized to the cycles. We have to make sure that we do not get stuck in this mindset, because it will dominate us if we collectively believe in these cycles in this way. You cannot allow yourself to be mind controlled into these cycles, because then you'll never ever have your real spiritual growth and your real spiritual development, because you're just a victim to the Kali Yuga. You're just a victim to an age or a cycle that we're all just going through right now. And yes, again, we are going through something like a Kali Yuga collectively. Yes, that is true. But do we need to? Do we have to? Are we victims to this Kali Yuga? Well, I'm not going to allow myself to be a victim to it, because that's what's true in nature. You don't have to be a victim to some type of cycle in consciousness. Now, we are, however, victims to cycles of the Ice Age. We are victims to cycles of the sun. We are victims to the cycles of the moon. There's no escaping these cycles because they are part of our being. But consciousness, however, does go through different fluctuations. I do agree with that. But we don't have to be victims to some kind of, you know, predicted ideas like the Kali Yuga, okay? In a literal sense, okay? We can apply it spiritually to ourselves, and we can apply it spiritually to what we're seeing in the here and now. And that's it. Otherwise, we might as well just be victims to this idea or to this sacred science. And I just don't see any real spiritual growth coming from taking that literal as a cycle in consciousness. I just don't see how that could be any good. Okay, so I just wanted to make that very clear, just in case I didn't do that on the last show, which I don't think I did. Now, we're going to look at the seal of Theosophy, the symbol that you see on the right. This is also referred to as the Blavatsky seal. And at the top of this seal, we see the Hindu symbol, which is called the Om, which looks like a three with a lentil-looking symbol next to it. And this is also called the Aum, the A-U-M, and that also corresponds to that three-looking symbol. So A-U-M, as three letters, corresponds to that three. So this is part of understanding the Trivium, or the Holy Trinity, okay? This is also called the Pranava. And this symbol is also known as the Creator being the sound of creation. So it's the sacred word. It's the Logos. That's what this Om is. You know, think about Om as far as the first two letters of the Creator being omniscient or omnipresent or omnipotent. This is about understanding the Most High. And the symbol is above the swastika, especially the Hindu swastika. And that swastika has a lot of meaning, and I'm not going to cover that here, but what I want people to pay attention to is that one of the meanings of this symbol is the winding creative energies going in a clockwise direction, which is a process of coming to an end of a cycle. Okay, so think about the zodiac. All right. So this swastika is also encompassed by the divine circle. And the name of that divine circle is called the Ring Pass Not, which means that we as a human species are confined to the conditions of the universe. We don't escape law. We don't escape natural law. We don't escape the law of one or God's law, the cosmic law. And then we see the Ouroboros serpent underneath that circle. And that Ouroboros is the snake which is eating its tail. And this represents the infinite cosmic cycle. Then within the Ouroboros, we see the hexagram symbol, which is made of the sacred feminine chalice and the blade of the masculine, the sacred masculine, and they're interlocked. And this represents the sacred union. And that sacred union or that marriage is what generates that equilibrium, which is the ancient Tau cross symbol that you see with the divine circle on top. And this is also called the Crux Annata. Okay. A lot of people know this symbol as the Ankh or the Ankh, which means eternal life, which also means immortality of the soul. Now, beneath the whole collection of symbols or this whole sigil or seal, we see the phrase, "There is no religion higher than truth." So think about what I said about the Om, okay? The Om, right? Because this is about there is nothing higher than truth or nothing higher than light. There's nothing higher than the all-seeing eye. So this statement, "There is no religion higher than truth," couldn't really be more true. Truth is the ultimate binding force in creation. No religion can be traced back as far as truth itself. Think about that. This whole seal represents the soul's journey towards enlightenment. It's a very deep, and rich seal or sigil. And there's so much more that I could say about this whole image. Now, we're going to go to the next slide, which is dealing with runes, the eschatology of runes. So runes in Norse mythology and Germanic paganism, runes reflects a cyclical view of the cosmos where creation, destruction, and rebirth are fundamental aspects of existence. Within runic eschatology, the concept of Ragnarok, which is the final battle between the forces of chaos and order, that plays a central role in the eschatology. It is prophesied that during Ragnarok, the world will be consumed by fire and flooded. And think about that corresponding to the lower and upper half of the zodiac, corresponding to the elements, you know, the elements being the lower water and the upper fire, okay? And this fire and the flood, this is leading to the destruction of the gods and the end of the current age. However, from this cataclysmic event, a new world will emerge, fertile and green, like springtime, being the, you know, the time of the rising hero, symbolizing renewal and regeneration. Runes themselves are seen as potent symbols of cosmic forces, embodying the principles of creation and destruction, and are often used in divination and magical practices to navigate the currents of fate and destiny. In essence, runic eschatology offers a mythic framework for understanding the cyclical nature of existence and the eternal struggle between order and chaos. So it's about aligning to natural law, which is order, and then coming out of chaos, which is ignorance. Okay, that's what this is about. So the rune, the symbol, the rune that we see on the right, this is what really expresses this whole eschatology, which is called the, it's spelled E-I-W-A-Z. And I've heard many different pronunciations, but the two that I go between are AWAS or AVAS. So I tend to say AVAS. Okay, so AVAS is this rune. This rune is the 13th Futhark letter in the Elder Futhark alphabet. Okay, so this whole alphabet that I'm talking about, there are 24 characters or letters or runes in this divine circular Germanic alphabet. The whole alphabet is in a divine circle. Okay, that's how you have to think about the whole alphabet. And each of these runes is a book. Okay, so you can pull from each rune so much information. Now, this particular AVAS rune is dealing with death, rebirth, and the overall transformation. Okay, so it means life is coming to a turning point. It's about change. And there's a phrase for this rune which states the axis or process of spiritual becoming. So this rune is dealing with the upper and lower worlds that are meeting at Midgard. And Midgard, if you're not familiar, is the Middle Earth. So what does Middle Earth correspond to, or Midgard? That corresponds to Amenta, Middle Earth, the sacred land. So this rune is the rune of the mysteries of life and death. And it's also associated with the Yggdrasil tree, which is also called the Yew tree. So it's spelled Y-E-W, the Yew tree. So think about what I said with the symbol letter U. Okay? This is the Yew tree. This symbol represents the Yew tree. It also represents the evergreen tree. And evergreen, as you've heard me explain many times, especially going through the underworld, this represents immortality because it's evergreen all through winter. And the tree being called the Yew is about a bow, like a bow and arrow, that's being constructed out of the wood from this particular yew tree. So that means that this rune is preserving the sacred feminine, okay, the sacred bow. Now, something that I really want to point out about the Elder Futhark symbols, okay, these runes, they are a really important part of our lineage back to understanding that we must go further back into pure forms, okay? Because we have to understand that alphabets became a form of symbol reduction. And what that means is for all the letters of the alphabet are symbols that are fragments of something that is more pure, okay? As we go further back into antiquity, the more we start to realize that these words that are bundles of symbols are fragments of something very pure. And that is what these runes actually teach us, because each rune is a book. Each rune is also what comes from the creation symbol being the flower of life. And this is also where we find the pillars of esoteric Freemasonry. This is also where we find the Kabbalistic tree of life, which then we begin to understand the tarot cards that overlap that. Okay, so this whole creation symbol, there's a reason it's called the creation symbol, because this is where these forms come from. So we have to understand that we're trying to get back to pure forms. And I would say that these runes are helping us get back to pure forms. But it has to go back even further than runes, because we're talking about a letter system of an alphabet. So it goes back even further. We have to get back to what I'm really trying to say is we got to get back to sign language. Okay? Sign language, we have to understand that the words of modern language are very much a decline within our communication, not only between ourselves here and now, but also between ourselves and the ancient past. So that's why we must keep going back in order to learn these symbols and keep going further back into the pure forms and understanding the pure forms. Okay, so sign language is really the true superior nature language. And it doesn't consist of words. First and foremost, we have to understand that the word, as in, you know, resembling animals or things like trees, is all about the transmission of energy. It's about thought, unthought. So we have to understand the importance of getting back to pure forms. We have to understand that sign language is about getting back to pure forms, okay? So I'm just stating that even though I'm not really versed in runes, I already see that runes are a way of preserving something very sacred that we must get back to in order to understand that we have to go even further back than runes. Okay, so it's all part of putting this bridge back together. Okay, that's really what it's about. A couple other things that I wanted to state before I go to the next mystery school is that this Avos rune is corresponding to the eye chakra. So this is the connection of the upper and the lower realms. Okay. This is about the material and the spirit connecting at the third eye. So that is also what this rune represents. It's a very powerful rune. And again, it's the 13th rune. So a very, very powerful number as well. Now, I've actually been taking the runes course by my good friend and fellow light builder, Logan Hart, of the Wizard Factory that we had on show number 66. And I've been on his show a couple times too. And he is doing a really great job so far that I've seen. I haven't made it through the whole course yet. But I highly recommend that anybody that really wants to understand the runes, this whole mystery school, you can go over to thewizardfactory.com and sign up for his runes course. It is a very well done course, and I'm very thankful that I was given the opportunity to be more introduced to that mystery school. So that being said, we're going to go to the next slide, which is the eschatology of Thelema. Now, the eschatology of Thelema is a spiritual occult philosophy that was developed by Aleister Crowley. And this eschatology revolves around the concept of the aeon of Horus and the fulfillment of the true will. That's what thelema actually means in Greek. It means will. So in thelemic eschatology, it is believed that humanity is transitioning from the aeon of Osiris, characterized by patriarchal values and dogmatic religion, to the aeon of Horus, symbolizing individualism, freedom, and spiritual evolution. And this goes hand in hand with what I've been sharing regarding Osiris as the god of the living material mind, going down to his death as god of the underworld, and then, you know, the eventual rebirth of Horus being the hero. Okay. So Thelemites anticipate the eventual manifestation of the crowned and conquering child, the archetype representing the fully realized human potential. This manifestation heralds the complete realization of one's true will and the establishment of a new era of self-awareness and divine consciousness. Thelema's eschatological vision emphasizes personal growth, spiritual liberation, and the realization of one's unique destiny within the grand cosmic tapestry. And again, the rising of the child, being the conquering child, is about the birth of spirit being raised into the material. It is the sacred marriage or sacred union of the spirit and the material, okay? And if we look at the Thelemic sigil on the right, we see this divine circle which is encompassing this hexagram. And this is a unicursal hexagram. And unicursal means one movement. Because if you were to find the point in the middle of the circle and draw from that point the whole hexagram, you would arrive back at that point without lifting your pen. Okay. So it's unicursal. And that is very allegorical because that means the beginning and the end. Okay, so this is about the Alpha and the Omega. This is the eschatology. This whole symbol represents the eschatology. Okay. And then the hexagram is made of the interlocking or the union of the blade and the chalice. So you have the sacred feminine chalice, which is downward pointing, and then you have the sacred masculine blade, which is upward pointing. So they're interlocked, they're unified in the middle, okay? And in the middle, we see this five-petaled flower, okay? And this is a very important part of this whole symbol, because when the flower is inverted, that means that the spirit is still in the womb of the chalice of the sacred feminine, okay? It has not been born yet. So if the flower is the way that you see it now, that means that the spirit has been born from the chalice into the masculine, into the material. Okay, so spirit raised into the material. This is the sacred birth. Okay, this is the eon of Horus. This is the rising of the child. Okay, so we have to understand that, and that the child being the spirit. Okay, and now the texts that we see that are wrapping around this sigil reads, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Love is the law, love under will." Okay, so love is a spiritual force that must be guided by the will, the true will, the true care, okay? True will is considered right action or wisdom, okay? It's about agape love. Doing what is right through agape love, the highest form of love. So it's not about personal gain. It's not about selfishness. It's about doing what is right because it is right. And, you know, some people think that thelema just means do what thou wilt. You know, this is this hedonistic worldview. This is someone who has not had their spiritual awakening yet, okay? This is someone who is still in materialism. But a lot of people don't even take the time to read the whole seal, okay? The whole seal has to be read. You can't just read one part of it and think, well, that's all it means is do what thou wilt. Okay, so this would mean that someone is dwelling in the dark. Okay, doing what you want without the love, the agape love, without love under will. So this would mean that the five-petaled star or the five-petaled flower in the middle is facing down. It's inverted. It means that the spirit has not been raised yet. It has not been birthed yet. Okay? So this is very important to understand in different orientations. And it's also important to understand that this flower, this five-petaled flower in the middle, is definitely intertwined with the Rosicrucian symbol of the rose, okay? So Rosicrucianism and thelema actually go together. Okay. They actually share certain symbols, such as the rosy cross, but also the Thalamic tradition goes with tarot as well. And tarot, really, you can use with just about any tradition, but it's just very important to understand how these traditions all can complement each other to some form or another. And again, all these mystery schools can be used for dark purposes or light purposes, okay? So that's very, very important to always pay attention to the dark and light aspects, okay? The aspects of the dark side, which is based in egotism, or the light side, which is based in the true will, okay? The uppercase will, okay? So egotism is the lowercase will, doing what you want in this world because you just want to get a leg up on someone, or because you want to take advantage of people that are dumb, or you want to basically do everything for selfish gain. That is the lower will, okay? But the higher will, or the uppercase will, is about doing what is right because it is right, because of agape, because it is what is going to bring more light and more enlightenment or more evolution into the world. That's what it inspires to do. That is true magic. And that is what Thelema is all about. It is a magic system. It is a system of magic. You can do dark magic or you can do light magic. Either way, it is a magical mystery school. Now, there's so much more to Thelema and the eschatology of Thelema, but I'm going to move on to the next slide, which is the eschatology of alchemy. So alchemy is a very important mystery school that we should know through vitriol. And vitriol, so the texts that you see around this seal, this is the Latin text of the acronym vitriol, which is visita interiora terrare rectificando in venies occultum lapidem. What it means is, what vitriol means is, visit the interior of the earth, and by rectification you will find the hidden stone. So this is about Amenta. This is about the underworld. It's about visiting Amenta, the sacred land, you know, the middle earth, which is the heart. It is the dark ride of the soul into the deep depths of the soul, the heart. Okay? So this is about purifying the heart and finding care at this central area, and then rising up. And symbolically, for anyone who has seen my Earthbrain 2 presentation, this would be the cone symbol with the pole that is rising from the middle surface point between the circle, the point within the circle that is the point rising up as a pole to the highest point of the cone, okay? So the hidden stone is the occulted Benben stone. So it can be looked at as the pyramidal. It is the internal capstone. It is the spire. It's about the central fire raising in the middle, raising the spirit. It's the philosopher's stone, which is also called the lapis. And the lapis is also called the quintessence by means of the transmutation of metals, you know, base metals to gold. So it's about facing the darkness and learning the darkness to be able to rise up with light. It is the achievement of the great work. And alchemy, as a spiritual teaching, is about turning base metals into gold. And the spiritual teaching of that is base consciousness into enlightenment, or materialism into enlightenment. So this is why, when raising the spirit, we can get very vitriolic, because we have a gnosis of what is really going on in the world and why it is so upsetting, because we've become sensitized. Going from the dark into light makes you sensitized. It makes you alive. It brings you out of the mire of comfort into the uncomfort of light. It means to rise up and speak truth because you know the truth. So it's about transforming the occult into wisdom. And what I mean by that is about coming into the knowledge of the occult, learning what is really being used to control the minds of the masses, and then de-occulting, unhiding that knowledge by putting it into rhetoric, because you know it and you understand it. So putting that into rhetoric is wisdom. Putting that into texts is wisdom. Putting that into art is wisdom. So it's any expression of de-occulting is wisdom, especially in today's world. So it's really about symbolically breathing fire of truth. But, you know, it can also mean breathing fire of destruction. It's caustic. It's about waking the spirit up within yourself and then help awaken the spirit up in others. So the process of these mystery schools, these mystery school eschatologies, are really all part of the Osiris ritual. It's about being eclectic. That's what esoteric Freemasonry is all about. To be eclectic is to embody the sacred feminine care, which is symbolically Isis, who is searching for all of her husband's body parts, all the parts of the whole. Okay, think of the whole circle divided in 14 parts. And what you're trying to do is find all those pieces, all those parts, and put them back into the whole to see the bigger picture. That's what understanding even means deeply. And this whole round table of these religions and these mystery schools is a symbolic body of knowledge. That is Osiris. Symbolically, that is Osiris. And I'm 100% not saying that this is where we're going to find all the necessary parts or the whole truth, okay? It's just that these religions and the mystery traditions that I've stated, they're really just helpers, okay, on our path to truth. None of these religions and traditions can actually provide the whole truth. They only provide discoverable, helpful parts of the central light being truth. And having the shield of natural law, this is what's going to really help with finding what the truth really is. Truth itself is the only real binding religion in the universe. And yes, all these religions are binding, but they are not the way or the truth in and of themselves. Okay, they retain truth within them. Okay, a certain amount of truth. So this is part of understanding the maze cube, the symbol of the maze cube, because these traditions and religions are simply stepping stones to the truth. But we have to be aware of all the limitations, all the traps, all the cul-de-sacs, okay? We have to understand that religions are part of our history. They're part of our heritage. They're part of our culture. So they serve as journals. They are books. They're blueprints. And they can help us understand ourselves to some degree. And some religions definitely do this better than others. Some traditions do this better than others. But they all carry something valuable to our survival and evolution as a species. Okay? They all bring something valuable to the table. Okay? To the sacred table. So, why then are religions demonized? And why do those that partake in these religions demonize each other? Think about that. Well, for one, all believers in these religions, they simultaneously believe in socialism. They believe in man as the lawmaker, whether they know that or understand that or not. So this is a great aggregated cognitive dissonance that has essentially festered in the minds of most people of this world, most men and women of this world. So it's a very dangerous belief based in fear, which is truly the divide away from the spirit, the creator, which is also what maintains materialism. This maintains internal materialism as the executor of the mind. This is about literalism. Okay? But the other reason is it all has to do with the universally flawed belief that their religion is the right or correct religion, the only true religion that is created by God or their God. Okay? This is what so many of these religions, what so many of the religionists of these religions, this is what they profess. They profess that their religion is the only true, correct religion. And when I say that, I'm also talking about atheists. I'm talking about Satanists, okay? Because they believe that their belief system is the only true and correct belief system. And the way that I look at it is it's a very lazy, uneclectic way to the truth. See, we got to understand that being uneclectic and professing what the truth is, this is what real unholy religion really is. Unholy religion is the lazy, apathetic, uneclectic approach to the truth. It's about staying, you know, bound to a certain religious institution through faith, through belief in the dogmas that are associated with those religions, with no real deep understanding of what truth discovery really constitutes. And eclecticism of many traditions from both the exoteric surface down to the rich esoteric revealings. This is what helps the serious seeker, the serious student towards the central light and having a fuller clarity of what truly is. So the outer edge of this round table, this archetypal round table, is what requires belief. And the more central that we go to this round table, this sacred archetypal round table, the less belief is required, but the more knowledge and gnosis is required. You see? So the outer edge of the round table can be akin to faith and belief. And as you work your way to the center, in a spiral-like unfoldment to the center, is all about gaining knowledge and having a gnosis in order to make your way to that central light, being truth. So all these religions and traditions have an eschatology that can help us get closer to that central light. And that central light truly is source. It is nature. It's the creator. That central light is natural law. It is good. It is harmony. And again, this central light is truth. It is principle. It is the absolute principle. And, you know, keep in mind that the reason these outer major religions, these exoteric religions, why they're so well known is because they are something that is pushed really hard into the public minds in the day of light. And I think anybody who's listening to this can actually see this and understand this. So these religions are easier to see. They're easier to turn to. They're easier to accept. They're easier for many to believe. It's easy to believe. It's easy to have faith. So they're dwelling in material light. And I would say it is very well known by the ruling class that most people don't want to even acknowledge the esoteric or occult knowledge. They know that most people don't want truth and would rather stay stagnating in material darkness where it's quote unquote safe. You know, it's comfortable. It's fun. It's easy. Darkness, staying in darkness, staying in ignorance is easy, right? It's fun. This is why people who are ignorant make the claim that ignorance is bliss, because it quote unquote justifies that as long as they stay ignorant, they can stay happy. That's probably one of the saddest quotes that I've ever seen in my life. But these dark sorcerers, these dominators, these rulers from the shadows, they know this very well. They understand this psychology very well. So they know that most people simply don't have any care. And that's what has to rapidly change if we're to raise out of the state of enslavement that we're currently under. So it all starts with you. It all starts with the individual. So the goal is to eventually stand in truth. Not your truth, not my truth, but to stand in what is true, which is truth. And once you have made it to the truth, and that doesn't mean that you're going to embody the whole truth. It just means that once you have raised yourself and have discovered that philosopher's stone, when the spirit has raised, when you're able to really see what's going on in this world and have a good view from the top of that internal sacred occult mountain within, when you're able to look from that peak, you are standing in truth. And then the real great work is to spread that light to others, to go back down the mountain and spread that light to others. Okay, this is part of understanding the circled dot symbol, because the goal is that we start in the circle, which is about starting in darkness or starting in ignorance. And then we unfold our journey going in a spiral-like direction to that central point, to aim for that light, to aim for what is central, which is truth. And so as we arrive at that point in the middle, then the goal, the real great work, is to spread out to the circle, which represents the ignorant masses, those who are not raised, those who are ready to begin their journey. And so it is a very beautiful part of the garden, because you're planting seeds in others in hopes that something grows, something good. Okay? But it's all about helping others find their way to the truth. Once you are standing in truth, which is standing in principle, because principle is about having a strong foundation. And if your foundation is weak and based in lies, then your whole structure will fall. But if it's built in truth, if it's built in honesty, if you're acting on principle, which is truth, which is at the center, then you can spread something beautiful and strong to that outer ring of people who are starting their journey to the center. You see? So it's a perpetual, beautiful system of morality. That is the essence of esoteric Freemasonry. Okay? So I'm going to get very deeply into that as we go through these episodes, but I'm not going to have enough time to get into the rest of the content, which is going to be very revealing regarding the what has inspired these mystery schools, what is preserved in these mystery schools. And so what I'm going to get into on the next episode is really, really going to help us understand deeply where this, most of this information really comes from, okay? And I'm going to do my best to really bring as much beneficial information to really paint the picture the best that I can, so that way you can really see just how important this whole mystery is, okay? Because it's all about anthropology. It's all about understanding the development of the human story. It's all about origins. It's all about culture and really where it all begins. What inspired this type of information? So, just to reiterate what I covered so far in this show was I got into the mystery schools and the eschatology of these certain mystery schools. We covered the eschatology of Sufism or Sufism. We covered the eschatology of theosophy and runes and thelema and alchemy. And so these certain traditions are very vital to understand this whole eschatology that is very difficult to understand in the exoteric religions. Because again, exoteric religions are teaching the people how to set their sights on something historical. And that means living in the future, but also living in the past, to where the esoteric systems are teaching people how to live in the present. Okay? But we must understand both. It's not a good idea to only study the esoteric. We must study the exoteric in order to appreciate the esoteric sciences of these mystery schools. Okay? So there's a lot to it, and I'm going to continue to break this information down the best that I can as I move through these episodes. And I will say that I probably will do one more show for those who are current listeners. I will do one more show probably in August. And then I probably will not do any more shows after that for the rest of the year because of my new presentation, my EarthBrain 3 presentation. I'm going to really put a lot of time into this work so that way it can be a very polished demonstration, and I really just want it to be my best work so far. So I'm going to really put a lot of time into it. It really means a lot to me, and I really hope that this information has served you well. I hope that it is inspiring. I hope that you have more of an eclectic viewpoint of this whole central mystery. I really hope that Osiris is starting to make more sense to you. And that being said, I really appreciate everybody who has made it this far for tuning in. And if you are interested in any more of the shows, presentations, or news, if you're not already there, you can go to cubbyhole.com. And also, if you have any questions regarding the topics for these specific shows, please email me at cubbyhole@mail.com. And that being said, I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Thank you for listening, and keep in mind to do no harm, defend truth, and keep transcending dogma.